This season of The Intersection could not have been made without Google. More specifically, Google Docs, Google Mail, Google Maps, Google Scholar, Google News, Google Books, Google's YouTube, Google Bikes, and Google Search. These products were integral to the production of this podcast. But to be clear, I received no financial support from Google. In fact, they refused to talk to me. The views expressed by their employees and subcontractors are their own and do not represent the views of Google. And now, a new episode of The Intersection.
Come on in. The baby's asleep, and my husband is out with my older kiddo. So if she sleeps for a little, we can stay and talk. If she wakes up, we can walk and talk or whatever.
Hi. Oh my god.
Look at you. Baby's first interview.
Yeah. Hi.
And you wake up happy.
Oh, she does. Oh, happy and sweetie. Yeah, she was warm in there.
Welcome back to The Intersection. In the first episode, we joined the caravan of misery and made our way to this corner, North Shoreline and Space Parkway. There are many reasons getting here is so difficult. It certainly doesn't help that it's far from mass transit. But at its core, the intense traffic is a math problem. More than 20,000 people work in the neighborhood, but there are less than 400 housing units within walking distance. In the next two episodes, we're going to focus on housing, or to be more precise, the lack of housing. The most recent residential development in this neighborhood was completed nearly 50 years ago. If you look on a map, it's that tight cluster of streets right in the middle of Googleville. When I stumbled upon this aging subdivision, I thought to myself, I wonder how long this will last. Sooner or later, I assumed Google and the forces of gentrification would consume it. Then I spent some time here and realized how unique this community is. And I thought, maybe, just maybe, it will survive. The community is just 800 feet from our corner, but it feels like an alternate universe. As we walk down Space Parkway, we pass several empty industrial buildings and a few two-story offices. And then we arrive at an almost grand adobe-style entrance. The sign, in medieval lettering, welcomes us to Santiago Villa. Suddenly, the streets are wider and paved a pitch black. The traffic all but disappears, and the gray of the suburban office park gives way to a rainbow of pastel homes, all perfectly lined, one after the other. It feels like a gated community without the gate. Folks stroll down streets named Bonita and Casa Grande, and with palm trees swaying above, the whole place has a vintage resort vibe. But this is no resort, and whatever you do, do not call it a trailer park.
It's not all double wides. It's not all trailer trash.
It's a village of mobile homes. It's not a trailer park.
Which I like to call the Santiago Villa mobile and manufactured home community, because, you know, they're not that mobile.
And inside, the homes are, well, homey. Some have mustard-colored kitchens and decor right out of the 70s. Others have high-end stainless steel appliances and great rooms. But perhaps what's even more unexpected is who lives here.
We've got just a really wide variety of people living in this park. We have much older generation. We have people with young kids like this one. We've got all different socioeconomic classes. We've got people from all different countries. You would be surprised.
Especially when you come across people like this 30-something mother who works practically a stone's throw away at one of the largest tech companies in the world.
My name is Anna Botelho, and I work at Google. We are residents at Santiago Villa, so that means I can walk to work, which is pretty unheard of. I'm going to throw this away, and maybe we can take a walk.
Maybe you can give me a little tour of the neighborhood.
Yeah. A tour of the neighborhood starts right here. It is really nice and quiet out here, and very safe. We can just leave our bikes in the driveway, and we don't have to worry about anything. Most people think of, oh, you don't have any space. It's true. We're very close to our neighbors, but it's amazing what you can make do with, I don't know, what, like 15 feet by 5 feet in the back and 5 feet by 20 along the side. We've got kind of anything that I would want to grow. I just added a plum tree and an apple tree and an avocado tree and tangerine and lemons.
So how do people react when you say, I work at Google?
Here in the park?
Yeah.
They are not surprised in the least. Because literally Google is right next door. Like, we're walking in the street right now. The building behind those houses is Google. The building out that gate is Google. The building out that gate is Google. Like, everywhere around. I think the people who are more surprised are maybe other Googlers or maybe even completely unrelated people. I can actually learn a lot about that person by their reaction. Some people, their eyebrows go up when I say I'm in a mobile home because they know that I grew up in Palo Alto or went to Yale or work at Google, and they're like, you're living in a mobile home? And I'm like, yes I am. It's wonderful. You should try it sometime. I think the Googlers actually, when I show them where I live, they're like, oh my God, how do I get in? Because it's so close. And most Googlers are fighting through really intense commutes and traffic. So there's, in fact, I don't know, 20 more of us that live here in the park. We have a little mailing list called Santiuglers, which is Santiago Villa Googlers. So there's a community.
Still, that's just 20 out of more than 20,000 who work in this neighborhood. Santiago Villa is right under their noses and somehow also under the radar. So how did Anna and her family end up here?
We were looking for listings in Mountain View. The options were just really poor. We could rent a really bad apartment for too much money, or we could buy a place for way too much money. We just couldn't really come up with something that looked good.
Even though Anna and most tech employees earn six-figure salaries and then some, this is a common dilemma in a town where the median rent is over $4,000 and the median sale price is just shy of $1.6 million.
So my husband found the listing for these, and I myself would have probably never looked at mobile homes, but my husband is from Brazil. And in Brazil, there's not the same stigma. So for him, he was like, oh my God, there's this like amazing deal on these two bedroom, two bath over here where we work. Why don't we get one of those? So I came and looked at it and was like, oh yeah, this is great. So we moved in. So we're looking at Santiago Villa's clubhouse, which is done in an old Spanish style.
Come on, Dad.
There's a pool here. And I guess it's sort of a trade-off, the fact that our houses are a little smaller. There's a large social area that we can use for parties. There's a big barbecue pit, stuff like that. And right next to that is two little rinky-dink swings, sort of forlornly sitting by themselves. And I wish it was a full playground, but I think the owner was even very reluctant to put these in. But we'll see.
5 years and two kids later, the meager playground is one of Anna's few complaints. She's even come around to the park's kitschy decor.
So this looks a little, I don't know, Disney in a way, that everything is so much the same.
A nice water feature.
Yeah, so they try to make it nice in a 1965 kind of way.
Which I love. Well, it was built in 68, you're right on.
Oh yeah, there you go.
So I came across an advertisement for Santiago Villa in a March 1969 issue of the San Francisco Chronicle. There's an image of a shag-carpeted living room done up with mid-century exotic, and the copy just screams luxury.
Mobile living in Spanish splendor. Santiago Villa has something for everybody. Classic Spanish architecture, blended with the most modern facilities, provide a masterpiece of plush mobile home living.
How do we get from the Spanish splendor of the 60s to what so many people call trailer trash today? Fortunately, there's an expert for everything, just a phone call away.
So it's working now?
I think it is.
I'm Esther Sullivan. I'm an assistant professor of sociology at the University of Colorado, Denver. I specialize in studying housing, specifically affordable housing, and even more specifically, manufactured housing.
Manufactured housing is the industry's preferred term for mobile homes. To start, I read her that ad from 1969. I want to get her take on it.
That is a testament to the time. That really lets you know that this stigma surrounding mobile home parks is absolutely socially constructed. It's not the same across time and across generations. And so in the 50s and 60s, there absolutely was this idea that a mobile home village could be the housing of tomorrow. It had that right mix of, you know, of hominess and innovation that so many people were interested in the 50s and 60s. And it wasn't until this became a primary source of housing for our nation's poor that that stigma just became so inextricably attached to the housing form. And that began with Nixon and his moratorium on funding for affordable housing.
And that stigma endures. Last year, the New York Times wrote an article about Santiago Villa with the headline, "Tesla's in the Trailer Park." And you can expect a lot more headlines like that in the future.
There's been a lot of recent interest in mobile home parks.
Why do you think?
You don't want to think every single thing is about the election of Trump, but I think it's brought issues about inequality to the fore. This idea that there's a real divide in the way that Americans are living, just like you're probably seeing that this mobile home park in Silicon Valley really encapsulates a lot of the interesting tensions and paradoxes that exist in our whole society.
These are tense times at Santiago Villa. For decades, the park has been a reliable source of affordable housing. Sure, it's closer to a Superfund site than a supermarket, but most residents appreciate the seclusion and solitude. And when some of the older residents moved here, back when it was an adults-only community, buyers just assumed they were trading a less-than-prime location for a sense of permanence. But things have changed around here. This formerly forsaken land in North Bayshore now sells for up to $20 million an acre. And this park is 40 acres of prime land worth hundreds of millions of dollars. So in this real estate market, and with this type of housing, it's hard to feel truly secure. Because here's the thing about mobile home parks. Unlike most homeowners who own both the land and the home on top of it, residents here may own their homes, but the park owns the land beneath them. Spaces are rented by the month, and there's no rent control. The only saving grace is that the land is zoned exclusively for a mobile home park, and the city has made clear that it has no plans or interest in rezoning it. Still, it's lost on no one that the owner of this park is John Vidovich, one of the Bay Area's wealthiest, most connected developers. He's built offices for Apple and Cupertino, as well as hotels and shopping centers throughout Silicon Valley. He's also being sued for unfair rent increases by residents of another mobile home park that he owns nearby. Understandably, residents at Santiago Villa are suspicious of his motives and management's every move. And that's why they showed up en masse to a 2016 city council meeting. They came to air their accusations and seek the council's support and protection.
So if you'd like to speak to us, please step forward.
My name is Christine Cray. I live at Santiago Villa. I love living there. But many of the residents are elderly retired professionals, people who help create, develop, establish Mountain View. And now they're bearing the brunt of what I can only describe as the greed of growth, where everybody seems to be wanting their piece of the pie. In the last 2 months, inspections that seem to target the older homes with the threat of eviction if your repairs are not done in 7 days have terrorized most of us. Some elderlies are even in tears, afraid of losing their homes they've been in for 30 plus years. And as far as myself, I turned 70 this year. I'm overcoming a stroke. I'm trying to take care of a 96-year-old mother. Where do I go when I don't get my repairs done in 7 days? I'll be one of your cars on the street with an old lady. Thank you.
A dozen more residents speak. They talk about their fears for the future and about space rents being raised to $2,400 per month. Finally, the park manager, Maria Ahmad, has a chance to respond.
Hello, I'm Maria with Santiago Villa. I did not know my residents were feeling terrorized by our management skills. Come and talk to us, and we will work with you. It doesn't mean in 7 days we're going to kick you out. That's not the way the rules work. But there are rules that each one of you have signed up for, that you have to maintain your lot, your house, to live there. However, we are not unreasonable. We understand there's people that are on fixed income, We've actually looked into places that will help fix homes for people that can't. Come and talk to us. That's all you have to do. And most of you are talking about these numbers. I don't know where you're getting your numbers from, the $2,400 rents and all of that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Excuse me, ma'am.
Now it's the city council's turn to weigh in and ask some questions.
You're saying these $2,400. So what is your range of rent for a pad?
Our turnaround rent for anybody coming in is $2,000.
So if somebody's been there for a while, are you trying to move everybody up to market rent?
We're trying to get everybody to the same level. And it's not going to happen in a year, 2 years, 3 years. It's a long process.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
After this meeting, Christine and some of her neighbors formed the Santiago Villa Neighborhood Association. Over the coming year, they returned two more times to plead their case in front of the city council. I was curious how they were holding up, so I returned to the park one afternoon this fall. I also reached out to management, and I never heard back. Full disclosure, it's Halloween. And after I snatch a few candies from her neighbor, Christine takes me and my one-eyed Shih Tzu named Studs on one of her favorite walks alongside a creek that's right behind the mobile home park.
That's Studs.
Yes, I smell like a kitty cat, huh? I'm going to take you through the cut through because we can't go out this way. Kind of know all the back alleys.
How long have you lived here?
7 years.
Where were you before?
I lived in Palo Alto from 1960 to 2010. I raised my child as a single parent there. I was in the subsidized apartment for 25 years raising my son. It's a stifling environment in subsidized housing. Totally stifling. You know, when they come in every 6 months and inspect your house and tell you you can't put your couch diagonally, you're not allowed to paint the walls any other color. I always felt like being involved with the government like that, it was like daddy. And I wanted to break away. I said, this is it. It's time. My son's grown. I'm going to have my own space. And daddy's not going to tell me what to do.
Studs.
You know, I can switch sides.
Oh, he's going to go where he wants to go.
So I went around to some of the other parks down in Sunnyvale. And every time I drove through this one, it felt like a little village.
So what does, like, home ownership mean?
It means a lot of responsibility, but it also means I don't have anyone telling me how to do it, which is why my walls are painted orange and yellow and green and whatever. We're going to cut through here. Oh. I found that little hole in the wall.
Have you always been an activist?
No, I've never been an activist.
So why did you get involved with this?
Because I live here. Because if it keeps getting more expensive, without having Social Security matching the rent increase, I don't know how long I get to stay there. And I tell myself, okay, stop worrying. It doesn't accomplish anything. It just stresses you out. Wake up every morning, look at that sign hanging over your kitchen door. It says, give thanks. Every day I say I'm grateful. I have a sky. I have my cat. I've got my own place. And as long as I keep focusing on that, hopefully it keeps happening.
Yeah.
That's it.
So I'm curious, and you don't have to answer if you don't want. How much wiggle room do you have before it's uncomfortable? Because things are going to go up.
Yeah. Well, right now, I turn 71 in a week. So I'm not looking at tons of time. So I think when they start blocking my sky, you know, if there's 10-story buildings there, I don't get morning sunlight. If there's a 5-story on that side, I miss my sunsets every night. They're encroaching on everything, and when the sky goes, that might be my breaking point. And plus the financial, you know, and that was just being necessity, you know.
So let's say the sky starts to disappear.
Yeah.
What do you do? What are the options?
Well, I just went 9 months without a car because my old Saab broke down. So I ended up scraping enough together and got my used car, my Subaru. And my thought was, it's supposed to pull a little trailer. If push comes to shove, that's where I go. And then I spend whatever days I have left going around the city, you know, the country. With the cat. Wow. See, look at the size of some of the redwoods they took down.
Wow.
We continue walking along the Stevens Creek Trail. We're passed by Googlers biking home and locals out for some exercise. On one side, we see swallows on the water's edge. On the other, the massive airplane hangars at NASA's Moffett Field. Finally, we make our way back to Santiago Villa.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good.
Christine wants me to meet another member of the neighborhood association, so we knock on his door.
John?
Hi, guys.
Sorry, I tried to call on that.
I know, I heard your voice and I answered.
John, this is David Boyer.
Hi.
Hi.
I think we met at one of the meetings when you first arrived.
Hi.
Nice to see you again.
Good
how you doing?
You. Good.
You want to come inside my place?
Sure.
All right. Place is relatively clean. It's usually a stink. It's usually a stinky man cave. See, not bad for a couple of grand a month. I actually have my own office. It was just, you know, when you work at home, oh my God. I have a guest bathroom. I mean, this is a lap of luxury here. I have a guest room. People are always surprised when they come in, you know, that's so large. It's about 1,500 square feet, but this is what makes it feel so amazing.
What's this?
The vaulted ceiling. I forgot him on the radio.
Introduce yourself and your role in the community.
Sure. My name is John K. Waters, and I'm currently on the steering committee for the Santiago Villa Neighborhood Association. I'm a freelance writer, and you know how much money we make. I write about the technology industry, and I'm right in the middle of it. I'm around the corner from the Googleplex, and I had my eye on this place for a long time because it was an oasis, and the only affordable, you know, housing in the area. I mean, when I moved here 10 years ago, my rent was around $800, and even coupled with the mortgage, this was affordable housing. And because I work at home, it's important for me to have a space that I can live and work in. And I looked around and, you know, for the same money, you get an efficiency. When I moved in here, management was extremely solicitous and nice. I was told the rent was not going to, I was told by the realtor that the rent was going to be about a 3% a year increase. And that's how I figured my budget going forward. I don't know. It was a nice place. And I don't know what caused it, but one day we all got a really nasty, scary letter that said, you know, your properties are not up to snuff. You have to fix your fence posts and whatever, or you're out. I have a feeling the management didn't mean to sound this aggressive and scary, but they really frightened some people. And ever since then, it's been much more adversarial.
And the 3%, is that still happening?
Oh, no. That's changed a lot. I mean, as a matter of fact, we, you know, after the letter went out, management called a meeting and they informed us that rent increases were on a path to a minimum of $2,000 a month here. You know, I think my last rate increase was 6. And that's not nothing, you know? I mean, when you're kind of right at the bone trying to make it in Silicon Valley or trying to just maintain a domicile, that's real money.
So then what happened and how did you get involved?
Well, we looked up one day and all of a sudden, you know, the secret little island in this business park all of a sudden was the epicenter of all development. And the city council informed us that they were going to put up, there was going to be a hotel, Google or LinkedIn. There was kind of a back and forth between those two companies. We're going to move in across the street. They were closing the gym and the dance studio. And that, along with this letter and rent increases, I think caused a general feeling of helplessness. And we know how it is. If you've got money, you have clout. But how do you have influence over these kinds of developments? You band together and you show up. So we just felt like we had to act.
John joined the Santiago Villa Neighborhood Association recently, and like Christine, somewhat reluctantly.
I picked this place because it was like a little remote alcove in the midst of the Silicon Valley hustle and bustle. And I work at home, and I think of it as kind of a sanctuary, and I have mixed feelings about the people who live around me. You know, I'm kind of a get-off-of-my-lawn kind of guy sometimes. But when your home is threatened, it makes you a little more neighborly, I think. One silver lining is that I've gotten to meet with my neighbors and work with them and talk with them, and they really are a nice bunch of people. And They're from all walks of life. Some of them on our committees are Googlers who are sympathetic. They're people who work at blue-collar jobs. They're teachers. This is the kind of place that people at that income level can actually have a house in Silicon Valley. And that's a gem. That's a jewel. They should want to protect this, you know. People are worried, you know, our fate is uncertain here. And we talked to an attorney during the course of our researches. One of the things he said is the reason that that people buy mobile home parks and the reason they love them is because their tenants are trapped. I can't just pack up and get a U-Haul and go to another apartment. You know, my place, it'll have to be split apart and put on two flatbeds. And then where would I take it? There's really no place in this area to take it. I'd have to move to Bakersfield. You know, I don't know about Bakersfield, but I'd have to move. I couldn't live here. Guys like me, I mean, you know, I'll figure it out. I'm young enough that I could figure out a way to go. I'm 61, for what that's worth. But some of the older people who live here came to the park when the rent was a few hundred dollars, and now they're looking at $2,000 as the base rent. So they end up moving off to assisted living, you know, before they would have had to leave their homes, you know?
Maybe you're thinking, can't they just sell their homes and move somewhere else? They can sell, but these days, they're not going to get much for them. In fact, Santiago Villa may be one of the only places in the Bay Area where house prices are actually falling. And here's why. If you're a buyer, what you're concerned about is your total monthly expenses, aka your mortgage plus space rent. So hypothetically, a house that sold for $100,000 in 2015 had a mortgage of approximately $1,000, plus another $1,000 for space rent. Well, guess what happens when management doubles those space rents?
It impacts the value of your home, so higher rents mean our homes are worth less. How dumb are we? How dumb are we to have done this? This is terrible.
It's not John's imagination. According to public records, a home in the park which sold for $64,000 in 2012 recently sold for $45,000. And practically every recent sale occurred only after the asking price was substantially lowered.
And people have said that it's making it difficult for them to sell their homes. And it has been reported that some people have tried to sell their homes, had several go-rounds, and then eventually got a lowball offer from management.
What happens next? Well, they pour salt on the wound.
Anyone moves out, the management seems to move their own unit into that space, and then they charge $4,000 and up and rent it as a townhome. So I understand the management's position, you know, this is a business, they need to make as much money as possible, but, you know, the consequences are dire for some people.
Almost 50 years after that grand opening ad ran in the San Francisco Chronicle, I came across this on Craigslist, posted by Santiago Villa Management.
$4,145, three spacious bedrooms, brand new, walk to Google/Microsoft.
There's absolutely no mention that this is a mobile home community. And instead of promising a new, exciting way of life like it did in the 60s, Santiago Villa now boasts a convenient location and easy access to the freeway. Gone are the days of fantasy lifestyles. These days, the name of the game for residents is just holding on.
I'd actually planned to, you know, retire here. I don't want to leave. But that's a real possibility.
What do you think is going to happen? What's your prediction?
My prediction is that we will have some influence. But also, I think we're all going to pay higher rents. That's just how that goes. The question is, will they be too high? And in a way, it's a little bit like the saying used to be that he's like a frog in boiling water, you know. If you boil the frog slowly, he'll stay there till he's boiled. But science has proved that the frog finally notices that it's too hot and he jumps out. And that might end up being us. So, and in the meantime, the water's getting pretty hot.
The same can be said for the entire Bay Area. The region is the wealthiest in the country, and the world still looks here for the next big thing. But the gulf between rich and poor continues to grow, and more of our people are living in tents on the sidewalk or in parks and parking lots. This cradle of innovation may be creating the future, but it continues to struggle with the day-to-day. And so, After years of restrictive building policies and widespread NIMBYism, the rush is on to build more and denser housing to improve the mass transit system, all while remaining true to the Bay Area's liberal and progressive traditions. It's quite the balancing act for our cities, institutions, and residents, and we can all see which way the scales are tipping. On the next episode, we check out one other housing option at the corner of North Shoreline and Space Parkway. We'll meet three people who sleep in their vehicles night after night. Next time on The Intersection.